Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
If I may, let me just ask you to get out there and win one for the Gipper.
Win one for the Gipper. Well, that was then, this is now, I suppose. In a few months from now, we'll have a new phrase. Maybe in a few days from now, go out and win one for the Guzzler. I'm not sure. But I have a question for you on the Savage Nation. Afghanistan. I predicted a few weeks ago that there will be an anti-war movement in this country. It will come from the right. The left love this war. The left wing loves war. The left wing is a natural. The left wing is actually a warmongering movement. I don't think you understand that. They got us into Vietnam. It was the left. It was Kennedy that got us into Vietnam. It was a Republican who got us out of Vietnam. It was a Democrat who got us into World War II. It was a Democrat who got us into Korea. So make no mistake about it. The left has you bamboozled into believing they're an anti-war party. They're actually warmongers. Notice how they hated Iraq only because it was Bush's war, but they're silent when it comes to Obama's war in Afghanistan. Now, I'm not a Republican. I want you to understand that. I'm an American first, last, and always. But I want to know what we're doing in Afghanistan. We hear that the situation is deteriorating. We hear that Marines are dying every day, partly because of the U.S. strategy and the rules of engagement, where they're told to go over there and not shoot anybody until shot at. It's unbelievable to me. And now we hear that Admiral Mullen, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, wants to combat Afghanistan's culture of poverty. Now, I didn't know that the U.S. Marines were dying to end poverty in Afghanistan. In fact, I think that's actually almost obscene to say that. But the fact of the matter is, we're not supposed to be launching a new deal in Afghanistan. We don't have the money for it, nor do we have the moral imperative to do so. Moreover, there's never been a central government in Afghanistan. I have no idea why we're trying to build one now. And so, I ask you, should the U.S. leave Afghanistan? I'd like to hear your opinion. That's a very important question. We could also talk about the other topics that are in the news today, which is trickle-up poverty that is occurring under Barack Hussein Obama. The trickle-up poverty that I warned you about, we can talk about that. Where is Obama? Where is he? Where is Obama? I know he's at Camp David, and he's silent, and the media is talking about sports because his ratings have plummeted. They've tanked. The more America has seen of this man and his fanatical obsession with turning us into a socialist republic, the less they like of him. And that is why he's hiding. That's the truth. If you care to talk about these or other topics such as the release of the Lockerbie bomber and the celebration of his arrival in Libya and the salutations towards Gaddafi by the vermin in the media, you can call me at 1-800-449-8255. We know now that the British traded the terrorist for oil. We know also that the British put Michael Savage on the list of murderers and terrorists for oil. It's in my book, Banned in Britain. And the fact of the matter is that Britain cannot shake the accusation that the release of Libyan terrorist Megrahi was related to a trade deal. And I am telling you that the reason they took an innocent man in the American media, Michael Savage, and put him on a list with real murderers and terrorists is because they were told to do so by their controllers in Riyadh. That would be my guess. And yet, it's interesting to me that very few in the American media are covering this story about a member of the American media. Whether your politics are certainly different than mine, how could you ignore this story? How could you not see what's going on in front of your eyes? Then we have the obscenity of Representative Gerald Nadler wants to become the new inquisitor to investigate the CIA with regard to torture claims. This is almost obscene in the sense that Gerald Nadler would look good in black, in a black leather costume, playing Torquemada. But the fact of the matter is, for him to investigate torture claims borders on the obscene, truthfully. Scottish Justice Secretary Kenny McCaskill, so-called, continues to stand by his decision to release the Lockerbie bomber. ABC reports on the U.S. Marshals preparing to sell off Bernie Madoff's properties. What's interesting to me is that they're finally going to put up his estate in the Hamptons right after Labor Day. That means the U.S. Marshals were using the estate over the summer. Well, I mean, it was on official business. Them and their families, they had to go there and analyze the property. It only took 10 weeks. So the biggest con man in history spent his weekends in the Hamptons in a rather, you know, obscure little bungalow, truthfully, on a nice piece of land, but the house is a nothing house. But for U.S. Marshal, it's a pretty good deal to get to spend the summer in the Hamptons pretending to be doing the people's business. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Hartford, Connecticut. Stephen, you're first up. Go ahead, please.
Michael, we've been in Afghanistan for 8 years, and we're no closer to winning or ending that war now than we were when it started.
But here's the question, winning what?
Yeah,
winning what? What are we doing in Afghanistan? Why are the liberals gung-ho for this war? Why are Marines losing their legs and their lives for the corrupt Afghani leadership? Do you know that Karzai's vice president is a known drug dealer? Did you know that?
Yes. They want to keep this going, you know, just like Iraq, probably for the no-bid contracts.
I want to repeat again that according to George Will, who is a fairly reliable journalist, I read this today, he says that the economist describes President Hamid Karzai's government as such. He says his vice presidential running mate is a drug trafficker. And the administration is so inept, corrupt, and predatory that people sometimes yearn for restoration of the warlords, who were less venal and less brutal than Mr. Karzai. Why are we in Afghanistan? Why are we supporting a corrupt dictator in Afghanistan?
That's one of the questions.
I don't have an answer for that. Tell me, do you have an answer for that?
It's all about the money.
Well, why do liberals, like the mayors of liberal cities, who claim to be anti-war, like any Tusum Newsom, why is he not marching in solidarity with the anti-war people against this war in Afghanistan? Why? Is Bloomberg, Mayor Bloomberg, not against this war in Afghanistan? Explain it to me. Because it's a Democrat war, and billions of dollars are flowing through the Democrat Party into the hands of contributors. That's why. So while the Republicans initially benefited from the war in Iraq, until eventually the Democrats screamed loud enough that they started getting the money, and then you heard nothing against the war in Iraq. Now we have a war in Afghanistan, and both parties again are feasting on it. Isn't that true? I don't know. I have no other answers for the question. Well, we could talk about other things. Anyway, I'm not going to get stuck on this. It's a summertime week, the slowest news week in the year. It's so slow that even Wolf Blitzer of CNN has taken a vacation, and we're speculating where he might have gone. Everyone's off. Blitzer's gone. Leprechaun's gone. I think the wallbanger went to a gypsum factory to see how wallboard is made to brush up. I understand that the hemorrhoid with ears has gone to the Preparation H factory to investigate the manufacture of... No, seriously, where do you think a guy like Wolf Blitzer would go on a vacation? You know he's listening to radio and television. There's no way a guy like that... And where would the lep go? Where would they go on vacation? I don't understand. I go on vacation. I can't be away from the news. You can't shut the televisions and radios off. Like, if let's say I go to South Florida, which I do from time to time. It's no secret. I have TVs in every room. I have a radio studio I go to. How could you turn off the news when you're in the news business? It is like a medication that flows through your veins when you're in this business. Where do you think they went is another topic. Where would the leprechaun have gone on vacation? Where would the wallbanger be? Where would Limbaugh be? Where would Blitzer be? I'd like to know what you think about where they would go on vacation. Let's talk amongst ourselves because I'm not on vacation. I'm Michael Savage, and we're talking about the war and why we're in this war and why the Democrats have nothing to say about it. Sacramento, Jim, you're up. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Michael, I agree with most of what you always say. I've listened to your show for a long time. But, I mean, Obama inherited this war. And I think the Democrats are still...
Wait a minute. Everybody knows this is Obama's war. It was his war to end when he became president. He had a clean slate. He said he would end all wars. He lied. He lied about Iraq and he lied about Afghanistan. You know, you can only blame Bush for so much. You know, Obama inherited a $1 trillion deficit. That is true, Jim. We agree on that, I'm sure. Correct?
Well, yeah, but he also inherited this war. Obama.
Wait, hold it. Let's take it a step at a time. Obama inherited a $1 trillion deficit from Bush. And his cure for the $1 trillion deficit was to raise it to $3 trillion in 1 year. Did that make sense? So his cure for the war in Iraq was to amp up the war in Afghanistan by doubling the number of troops?
Well, that's what all the people wanted. The senators wanted that. So that was his first step. But I think ultimately...
Wait a minute. He's the commander-in-chief. What do you mean they wanted? He ran on a strict left-wing anti-war platform, and yet he has not only withdrawn us, our troops from Afghanistan, but he's about doubled the number of troops there. But the bigger question, Jim, is why are we there? What are we fighting for in Afghanistan? Do you have any idea why men are dying and losing their legs?
Those decisions. When I say that we...
Jim, hold it. Why are the Marines in Afghanistan? What is their objective?
To get them finally out of there, but they can't just drop what we've been doing.
Wait. To get what out of there?
Our people.
What do you mean our people? What people?
Sit there for years trying to help these people and then just drop everything and go.
You can't just drop everything and go? Why not?
Well, because that would...
Why not? We dropped everything and ran out of Vietnam because of you liberals. Why can't we drop everything and run out of Afghanistan? Because we left Vietnam and a million people were slaughtered by your friends, the communists. A million democratic people in Vietnam were slaughtered once the Americans were forced to leave because of Walter Cronkite and people like you. Why can't we leave Afghanistan?
Michael, again, I agree with a lot you say, but when you have a point that you can't fight, you always just change the subject.
Well, no, I am fighting the point because you're making no sense. You can't call this Bush's war.
It was. Who started it? It wasn't Obama that
Who started it? Al-Qaeda started it.
Well, exactly. And who stepped up at that point and said, okay, let's do something? It wasn't Obama.
But you're not making any sense. Are you arguing that we should be in Afghanistan? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that we can't just drop everything and leave right now. And you're saying that Obama...
Oh, wait a minute. Let's slow down. What is our objective in Afghanistan? Neither of us know, do we?
That he's commander-in-chief right now.
You're not answering me. What is our objective militarily in Afghanistan? What's the objective?
Michael, you did not answer my question.
Well, it's my show, not yours. You know, you can go yell at your children and put them on Ritalin if you want. You can't yell at me. What is our objective in Afghanistan? You're not answering the question because you don't know. All you want to do is continue to blame Bush for everything. Why don't you just drag Nixon out of the grave?
Help the people and get Al-Qaeda out of there.
Get Al-Qaeda out of there? How can you get them out of there when they are Afghanistan?
Not all of them.
Okay, let's start from the bottom. Do you know that there's an operation there called Operation Sisyphus, where dumb U.S. officials are urging farmers to grow other crops? What other crops will they grow? Lettuce?
Corn? Right.
Come on, now you know. Now you don't know what you're talking about. There's no money in corn. There's only money in opium poppies. They're never going to stop growing opium. It's the opium basket of the world.
So what?
Thanks for the call. It's the opium basket of the world. I'm the one who named it that, by the way. You can write that down. It'll be stolen by the Hem. If I'm not mistaken, the Hem's rushing to pre-record it for yesterday.
Oh, he said the opium basket of the world. That's good. Maybe I can use it yesterday and take credit for it and cry at the same time. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Let me explain something about a competitive field, whether it be sports or talk radio or the battlefield. In a competitive game, you either win or you lose. There's no in-between. You cannot choose a middle ground, whether it be in the media battle that I'm in, for example. You're gonna choose a middle ground, you're never going to get in the winner's circle. You got to go all out, whether it's a competitive bodybuilder, a competitive martial artist, a boxer, baseball player, football player, basketball player, golfer. You got to play to win. You've got to play only to win. Now, put that on a battlefield and tell your troops to tie one hand behind their back. Tell them they're not there to kill any enemy, but to win hearts and minds. And you have Vietnam all over again. That's why Iraq is now reemerging as a nightmare. That is why Iraq has become basically a victory for Iran, because Bush got it all backwards. And I ask you again, what the hell are our men bleeding for? Why are they losing their legs and their lives for what? What the hell are they doing in Afghanistan? For 8 years they've been in Afghanistan. Why not pull them out? What are they doing there? The fact of the matter is we've been involved there for a long period of time. The U.S. strategy, which is to protect the population. What does that mean? Why? This war is 50% longer than the U.S. involvements in two world wars. Did you hear that? It is 50% longer than the combined U.S. involvement in two world wars. NATO, worthless. What's our strategy? Nothing. Taliban, they can come back anytime they want. They know in the long run we're going to be out of there. Nation building? Why? There's never been a nation there. What do you mean nation building? What nation? When was there ever a central government in Afghanistan? It's tribal. It's a tribal region. So what in the hell are we doing there is the question. Or what the heck are we doing there is the question. Admiral Mullen speaks of combating the culture of poverty. We have the money to conduct a war on poverty in Afghanistan when you got people starving to death in this country? How? Where's the money going to come from? They say U.S. forces are there to prevent reestablishment of al-Qaeda bases, even though there are none there now. So what in the world is going on? Tell me what's going on. And I will tell you that there will be an anti-war movement that will be enormous in this country, and it will not come from the liberals or the progressives because they're liars. They're unreliable phonies. They only hate a war that's conducted in America's national interests. But any war that's conducted by a Democrat, for reasons that they don't even understand, they will support blindly. That's what I think is going on. And I believe that part of the reason Obama's ratings are in the toilet is because his own base knows this.
Savage.
It's summertime, 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 summertime. Well, shut them books and throw away. Say goodbye to dull school days. Put the line and change your ways.
It is the one savage nation.
No more studying history and no more.
Now we're living in different times. The unsavage nation. The unsavage nation. Everything is oh so politically kind and gentle. And yet we're fighting a war in Afghanistan and the liberals have nothing to say about it. Here in the Bay Area of San Francisco, in a very liberal area with everyone so good and fine and kind, sensitive and other things natural to superior people, I don't see any war, bumper stickers anymore. They don't even know there's a war going on. Now, it is true Marines are dying and losing their limbs. But it's Obama's war, and therefore it's a good war. They're happy now. It's so far away, it doesn't affect them. Well, while the war in Iraq did affect them, they couldn't sleep at night. While the liberals were up all night long worrying about the poor Iraqis. Every night we heard about hundreds of thousands of Iraqis dying because of evil imperialist America. But now that we're in Afghanistan, there is no evil imperialist America. It's a good war. It's Obama's war. And since he is saintly, everything he does is blessed with his saintliness. He is the new czar. He is the new superior czar. You know, I was watching the history of Russia last night on one of the history channels, and I got very alarmed at some of the parallels of the early days of the, like Ivan the Terrible, because he believed that he was anointed by God to unite, to unify Russia. Certain Austrian thought he was ordained by God to unify the German areas of Europe. Watch out for people who think that they're anointed by God. And I have a feeling that there's a gentleman in the White House who has a bit of that tendency, a sense of narcissism and egotism, unseen in a very long time in Washington, a man who is certain he was put here on earth to change America, to change the system of governance in America, to change the system of economics in America, in order to better the life of the poor. Be very careful of those who think that they're anointed by God when it comes to leading a nation that was founded strictly on a separation of powers. Be very careful indeed. And so now we're in Afghanistan, and I'm simply asking you, does that make me an evil man? Does it make me an evil man to ask you why we are in Afghanistan? Tell me who the warmonger is. Me, for asking the question? Now I'm the evil man? I should be banned where now? Where should I be banned now because I'm asking why are we in Afghanistan? Tell me which country I should be banned from. Who's the warmonger? Gordon Brown or Michael Savage? Why are the British troops in Afghanistan? Why are the Brits sending their boys to die over there? What are they dying there for? The great Labour Party of England sending their troops to Afghanistan for what? Nobody even knows why we're there. Why are we there? I want to know the answer. First of all, we're not going to win, I'll tell you right now. The British lost. Do you remember the Soviet Union, what happened to them in Afghanistan? You don't remember that? You don't remember in the 70s we were supporting I forget what they called them then. I don't even know what they called the Freedom Fighters of Afghanistan. Don't you remember? When they were fighting against the Soviets, they were called Freedom Fighters. Now that their sons are fighting our troops, they're not Freedom Fighters, they're terrorists. You don't remember we gave them Stinger missiles that wound up in New Jersey? You don't remember the U.S. military supplied Stinger missiles to the, what were they called then in the 70s? I forgot already. The Mujahideen. Their sons now are fighting the Americans. They're the same people. They haven't changed their philosophy. They don't want any foreigners telling them how to run their country. For better or for worse, it's their country. Why are we there? Why are we propping up a dictatorship? Why? I mean, why are the Marines being asked to die? Is it in our national interest in some way that I don't know about? I don't claim to be a military expert, and I claim to be a non-military expert. Or shall I say a military non-expert? So I'll turn it over to you liberals, because you're an expert in everything. Why are our men dying there? Because Obama said they should? Why are we there? Why is Congress not sending out anti-war messages? Where are the code stinkos? Where are all of the anti-war people? Where is the no war for oil bumper sticker? Where are the no war bumper stickers I saw all over the Bay Area for so many years? Where are they? Huh? No answer? Ray in San Francisco, KNEW, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Dr. Savage. First, let me start by saying I was a sergeant in the Marines.
All right, so you know a lot more about, you know a lot more than I do about this. Do you think we're going to win there?
Absolutely not. You can't win a war if you don't have an obtainable goal. You know, you're fighting a war on terrorism. Well, that's a nice pretense, but terrorism is always going to exist. It's like fighting a war on communism. How far did that get us in, you know, years ago? It's just not obtainable. I mean, if you're going to say take over a city, you can do that. That has a goal. If you're taking over this enigmous entity, yeah, I mean, there's a few targets here and there, but you're never going to eliminate it. So why are we there? Why are we continuing fighting? Are we just going to...
Well, let me ask you, were you in Afghanistan? Were you in that theater of operation, Ray?
Some of my colleagues were. I was fortunate enough to miss it. And
all right. You know, is there any grumbling amongst the troops about the objectives and lack thereof in Afghanistan?
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, there's always going to be some good, some bad, but for the most part, nobody wants to be there. I mean, you know, you're away from your family, and you know, for what? You know,
I don't know. I'm asking for what? I read the Marines are dying every day. Why are they dying? They're stepping on landmines. Their trucks are going over IEDs.
You know, I think when we first got there, you know, they could see some reactions. They were getting cheered in the streets, but they hit a certain point, and that's all changed. And then we've moved on to another target, and then another, and there doesn't seem to be an end in sight. And that's where, you know, the Marines are starting, you know, are going to start questioning what they're doing.
Jeez. Look, Ray, let me send you a free copy of Banned in Britain, and you'll read in my new book that there is a tie-in between Michael Savage being targeted by the British Labour government and their quest for oil from Arab nations. I have a terrible feeling that we are in Afghanistan partly because the controllers of our Congress want us to be there for their own reasons. Stay on the line. The corruption is endemic now in America, from medicine to the government. Here's an article that should make you very sad. A doctor who wrote in an academic journal that preschoolers may suffer from depression and should be put on antipsychotics, we learned today, received funding from three drug companies that make mental health drugs. The doctor who urged antipsychotics for three-year-olds was funded by Johnson & Johnson, AZ, and Shire. That's right, Dr. Joan Luby, a so-called professor of so-called child psychiatry at the so-called Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis, pushed the idea that children as young as three may suffer from bipolar disorder and that there are, quote, promising findings for the use of atypical antipsychotic agents and mood stabilizers, both singly and in combination in the very young. In my day, she would be put in prison. In a sane nation, she'd be stripped of her medical license. She'd be jailed for the rest of her life. Her article in the 2009 journal entitled Child and Adolescent Psychiatric Clinics of North America did not disclose that in the past her work had been funded by a division of Johnson & Johnson that markets Risperdal, and that she has given talks sponsored by AstraZeneca, maker of Seroquel, and has been a consultant for Shire, maker of Adderall, XR, and Vianace. V-Vianace. Did you hear this? How do you feel about that? How do you parents take this? How do you take this? How do you take living in a world where you can't even trust a pediatrician? This is not to tar brush every pediatrician, just most of them. They're drug peddlers. You know, 20 years ago, the pediatricians were saintly, and they were the poorest of all doctors. And the reason they were the poorest of all doctors is because pediatricians could not prescribe drugs by and large, because they knew better than to do that. You know, except in conditions of requiring real medication. And then that all changed. Slowly but surely, the big drug manufacturers got control of these so-called pediatricians and started to have them publish these fraudulent papers. And the next thing you know, you have little children as young as three being put on antipsychotic medications, turning them into zombies and drug addicts for the rest of their lives. She is more dangerous, and this type of doctor is more dangerous than a crack dealer in the cheapest neighborhood in America. Why? Because you know what a crack dealer is. A crack dealer doesn't pretend to be anything but a crack dealer. But a doctor, a medical doctor who wears a stethoscope and marches around giving learned papers on children, wants you to take a child who's a normal child with mood swings and tell you to put him on drugs? This is the world we're living in. Since 1981, I will remind you, I have campaigned against the overuse of drugs in children, and I wrote Healing Children Naturally. I am proud to have been a pioneer in this field, and I suppose that is one of the reasons I am banned in Britain as well. There is a nation where the people are so drugged they don't even understand they're being run by maniacs. Anyway, let's get back to Afghanistan. Why are we in Afghanistan? Why are we not leaving Afghanistan? What about those of you who voted for Obama? Are you happy we're in Afghanistan? Sacramento, Francine, welcome to the Savage Nation.
God, I can't believe I'm talking to you. I've tried to get through to you for a long time. I'm a 75-year-old Democrat that's embarrassed to say that I voted for Obama, and I wrote him a letter, and I asked for my vote back because he had written me a letter and asked if he could count on me because I hadn't contributed any money to the Democratic Party. We're in Afghanistan. I hate it, and I still have my bumper sticker on my car, which says, bring home all our troops right now. I've had that on for years since the war started, and I'm with...
Well, at least you're true to your beliefs. That's very unusual for so-called progressives.
Long. But first,
let me ask you, Francine, you're opposite than I am. You're political opposite to me, aren't you? So why do you listen to the show?
Why do I?
Yes.
I listened to the show because, my God, I finally got stimulated. I finally got excited. I finally said, oh, my God, I feel like I've gone back to the true me way back when I wrote for our school newspaper like 30, 40 years ago in L.A.
So, in other words, you feel the passion and excitement that I feel.
Yes, oh, my God, yes. You know, at first I didn't like it. I said, oh, he's just so conceited. And then I said, but I couldn't stop listening to you. Every day I began to become, oh, my, and you being...
You know, Francis, I want to address this issue, this concept that I am conceited and self-centered. It's probably true to a great extent, but let me explain something. Talk radio is a competitive event. It's not that different than any competitive sport. And anyone who goes out on the sports field has to be filled with themselves, conceited,
positive that they're the winner, convinced that they're going to defeat the enemy or they shouldn't go out there, they're going to get crushed. It's the same in talk radio. And anybody who goes out there and plays like nice guy, they never got anywhere. I want to tell you right now, Francine, you got to go out there ready to do battle. That's what this is all about. This is a combat sport. And so, sure, if I come across as arrogant, it's because I have to be in order to get up here every day and face people who are going to try to undermine me in various ways.
Well, you know, you being banned in Britain, that's horrible. I mean, I was really angry because I really believe in freedom of speech. I still work in a place.
Well, you see, you're a real liberal. You're different than progressives, who are very different than liberals. Progressives, make no mistake about it, are not liberals. They're a breed unto themselves. They're very close to fascists in most cases. You probably have encountered them when they won't even tolerate your opinions.
They don't. At work, I copied your article out of the magazine New Yorker. Oh, man, did I get a lot of cold looks.
Oh, you mean they don't want to read the New Yorker anymore because it wasn't condemning me and turning me into a mini Hitler?
One young man had a copy, and I said, I sure would like to borrow that so I could read. He said, Michael Savage, you're going to read him? I said, well, he's become my new guru. And they.
Well, I didn't write the article, Francine, did I? It wasn't my article. It was written by a former music critic for the New York Times. Is he suddenly persona non grata among so-called progressives? Mm-hmm. Because he didn't put me on a cross and crucify me? I'll tell you what, I'm going to give you a free copy of Banned in Britain when it's out. Stay on the line, Francine. In fact, I'm going to give it out every day this week that I'm on the air, I think, to every caller. Every day, every caller that gets on the air is going to get a free copy because I want this book read. I want it circulated. It will not be available in bookstores so far as I know, but the story is very important. I believe you're going to see the secret email chain, which proves definitively that I was picked on for reasons other than what they say. Okay? 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. I'll be right back.
Savage.
This war could be ended very rapidly. You could just bring the troops home. That's all. Otherwise, we're going to have a bloodbath there the way we did in Vietnam when we leave, and no one even knows the objectives. Nobody knows why we are in Afghanistan. And remember what went on in the 70s. Remember what went on in the 19th century. The British were defeated in Afghanistan and driven out. They suffered terrible losses. The Soviets, with the most advanced military, they're pretty powerful in the 70s. Remember those attack helicopters that they had? They had shock troops going into Afghanistan and burning villages to the ground. You don't remember any of this? And yet the Soviets lost the war. Their economy was so depleted that the Soviet Union collapsed. Now, one could argue that one of the reasons we're bankrupt in America right now, and make no mistake about it, the country's bankrupt. It's just that we're manipulating the currency. That is, the geniuses on Wall Street, by printing more money and playing games with the economy, is because of George Bush's Iraq adventure. What's the cost? $2 trillion? $3 trillion? Does anybody really know? Bush lied. He said that when he first went in that the war would pay for itself, he lied. You forgot that he said the war would pay for itself? And of course they could. The Iraqis could be forced to pay us in oil. Reparations for the amount of money we spent. They could never replace the lives that were sacrificed for their freedom, but they could pay in oil. Why are they not being told to pay us in oil? Because the Seven Sisters oil companies don't want that much oil put out into the marketplace for free, so to speak. It would drive the prices down. So, you know, use common sense and you'll come to agree with me. If you use your bigotry, you'll never agree with me. If you continue to be a bigot, and you continue to boycott reason, you're never going to reason with me. You know, many people who declare themselves to be liberal really are. Many people who declare to be progressives are not progressives. They're communists, mean-spirited, and intolerant. I had a dream last night where a voice spoke to me from heaven, and it said something, I can't remember exactly, it was something like, I distinctly remember the word vigilant. The voice said to me, be vigilant and be tolerant. I said, that's a very good phrase. And I try to think what it meant. Be vigilant, which is obvious, and be tolerant. Now, the be tolerant part is a very interesting one, because tolerance doesn't mean permit yourself to be rolled over by everybody under every circumstance. There's a difference between tolerance and stupidity. There is a difference between tolerance and naivete. There's a difference between tolerance and gullibility. There's a difference between tolerance, and I can give you 5 or 10 other words that have been lost to the American conversation. Tolerance is an awfully big word, but it doesn't mean gullibility. It doesn't mean naivete. It means tolerant. Tolerant means judgment. But the liberal has been brainwashed into not being judgmental, which has turned them into a sort of an individual who will let anything go except conservative thought. So think of my words, be vigilant and be tolerant. It came from my subconscious to you. Take it as my gift. Be vigilant and be tolerant. I didn't say be vigilant and be intolerant, did I? Because that, if I said be vigilant and be intolerant, then the vigilance would have less meaning. Vigilance requires analysis. Vigilance requires work. Liberals and progressives don't like to think about these things. They want to leave it to the government to do it for them. I don't. The reason I don't trust government is because they're just people like myself. And I know that I'm emotional. I know that I'm capable of making errors. And therefore, I know that the people who run my government are emotional and capable of making errors as well. The difference is that their errors can cause grave damage both to the nation and to the world. And right now, they're making one grave error after another. They're emotional. They're swinging all over the map. And so they're pushing socialized medicine. The people have pushed back. And that explains, by the way, where the anti-war protesters are. The rent-a-mobs of anti-war protesters have been twittered, and they've been told to go out and argue against those who would fight against socialized medicine.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Rock and Roll Tuesday on the Savage Nation, only because I want it to be so. Welcome to the program.
Please, Eddie, don't make me wait too long.
If you can walk with kings and never lose the common touch, then you will be a man, my son. So for an hour, we've been talking about why are we in Afghanistan. I think we've had a vigorous discussion. I mean, in this hour, I'll continue that if you'd like, because we have a caller coming up who's been there 3 times as a military man, and he says we should be there. I can't wait to hear from him. But I want to introduce a new topic in this hour. Here in the land of the trivial, San Francisco, the local newspaper has a feature front page story entitled Miss Cougar Accepts Prize in Palo Alto. Anything to do with sex is big news in the Bay Area, because they have their heads up at the you-know-whats here. And they talk about Miss Cougar America, age 42, and her boyfriend, age 22. It's a new beginning for me, said the suburban management. Cougar, married for 20 years, recently divorced and ready for something or someone new. I went from soccer mom with short hair, flat heel shoes, and fanny packs to cougar. I believe every woman has a cougar in them, someone who doesn't need a man for anything other than companionship, meaning sex, hot sex. So now they have a national cougar convention. And if you don't know what a cougar is, It is older women who have lost it, who attract younger men who are so messed up emotionally that they can't find a woman their own age and are only attractive to old women. But they, you know, they fancy it up and call it something else. And so they have a thing called Miss Cougar. I suppose it's harmless. If it's consensual, it's fine. But I've been thinking about this cougar thing. I would need a woman over 100 if I were looking for a cougar. You ever think about that? In other words, it's older women and younger men. And it says it doesn't matter nowadays. We're past that barrier. It matters what you bring to the table, he said, a 24-year-old guy who likes old women. And he says, look at Sotomayor, Condoleezza Rice, Hillary Clinton pushing the boundaries in the working world. The Bay Area is the perfect place for this. Yeah, everything, the Bay Area this, the Bay Area that, build up a bunch of schmucks, Bay Area. Out of town, as the whole thing's out of town. That's all. There are no limits to the lengths that women will go to in order to have sex. Now, are they going to have a pride contest about old women and young men? This is ridiculous. It's clownish. You know, why call them cougars? Just say they're old ladies who get young men. What cougar? It's unbelievable to me, the country that we're living in. Don't call me on it, but I was just thinking about how absurd it is. Older women, younger men. So I need a woman over 100 if I wanted to find a cougar. Are women that old still looking for... I'm not looking, I'm saying, but do they still look for guys at 90? I don't even know anymore what's going on. Miss Cougar. Who came up with that idea of a cougar? What else is out there? Cheney says politics behind CIA probe. No kidding. No kidding. Former Miss California sues over firing. She should let her win. She was picked on because of her politics. Miss Cougar accepts prize. Giants sweep Rockies. I am so not interested in sports. Although I must tell you, Sunday, I got to tell you, I mean, it was really a spectacle. I went out on a big boat. A friend brought up a 60-foot Manhattan. It's a Sunseeker. And a group of us went out on the bay. And we went past the park, the baseball park. We pulled into the cove. Wow. I don't even know. I didn't even know there was a game going on. But to see every seat filled, it was really a spectacle, like a Roman arena. I mean, it was exciting in a way, watching it from the boat, knowing I could leave any second. I know it's a big world. People have different likes. I like boats. They like ball games. Why not? I don't care. But I'm saying it was amazing, the size of the stadium, and every seat was full. Saturday, it was summer, 93 degrees. You could suffocate. The next day, I went out on the big boat. It was windy, cold, blustery. Amazing how it changed. Dogs were fine. They were out for hours without having to make. I tried to take one of them out on the poop deck, but they didn't know what a poop deck was because they're not people, they're dogs. Oh, here I am in San Francisco watching a beautiful white ocean liner leave Fisherman's Wharf, heading out underneath the Golden Gate Bridge with 1,000 drunken adults. 1,000 drunks on the boat. They start drinking a day before, and they don't stop drinking until the day after. Look, it's legal. Who are they bothering? Why are so many people falling off cruise ships now, I wonder? It's like a latest thing. Every trip, someone falls off and disappears. I wonder if that's got anything to do with the drugs, the Prozac and whatever. Well, who knows what it is? All right, it's a different world. It's a different world. It's a changing world. The sea is the sea. Who was it who said that the sea was my Harvard and my Yale? Whoever gets that right wins a free copy of Banned in Britain. That's an easy one. Come on. I have the most literate audience in talk radio. Who was it who wrote, and in which book did he write, the sea was my Harvard and my Yale? Because that is such a classically true line. It is so great. Meaning he didn't go to Harvard or Yale, but he was a merchant. He was a seaman. I'm not going to tell you what period it was in. You have to tell me who wrote it, what book he wrote it in, and approximately in what time period he lived, okay? Or if you want to talk about Afghanistan, why we should be there or not be there. I believe we should not be there because as a civilian, I don't know why we're there. Let me put it to you that way. I don't have a bias in this. I just don't like seeing beautiful young men getting killed for nothing. Let me put it to you that way. I'm a sentimental guy, and I see guys getting killed. I see some of the best Americans coming back in body bags, or crippled for life, and I don't know why they died or got maimed. What for? I mean, it's one thing to fight the Nazis in World War II. Let me say, anyone can understand that war. That was a clear war for our survival, for our way of life. We would have been enslaved. Many of us would have been killed. Our parents, we wouldn't be here, many of us, had Hitler won, okay? So you understand why they fought. And even if it was unclear to them, and even though most of the men didn't want to be there as well, and they didn't, make no mistake about it, the Greatest Generation didn't go out there and say, I want to die for America. Some did, but most didn't. The war in the Pacific, naval aviators, every flight was a suicide mission. Every flight was a suicide mission. Virtually every flight they knew they wouldn't be coming home. Those were the odds, but they volunteered for that class of service. And there were, you know, other divisions in the military where men knew the stakes. But the average soldier in America, make no mistake about it, didn't really want to freeze in a foxhole in the Ardennes forest in the middle of the winter. They did it because they had to do it. But why are we in Afghanistan is the question, and should we be there? Steve in Arizona, you say yes. You're first up this hour. Please tell us why.
First of all, Dr. Sayre, I would like to say thank you for everything you do. I'm a longtime listener. It's an honor to be on the show and actually talk with somebody with a different opinion. But I'd like to say that...
I know it's... you know what? I know that you say we should be there, and I understand you've been there three times, and I'd like to know why you think we should. I want to learn.
Yes, sir. You know, outside of the fact that we had an outstay, a government that was willing to support an organization that desperate enough to strike at us, you know, we knew that we had an inherent responsibility to assist with not only making sure the future government was prepared to fight and resist such groups, but also to give people that were just completely torn down an opportunity that we had that, you know, such as back in the Revolution and that the French and the Germans assist with us when we became a country and became a nation, you know, to help them out. And they really do need our help. And I would say overwhelmingly that the servicemen and women and the Marines that are over there that are working so hard, they really support this. Do we really like to be away from our families? No. But I can tell you overwhelmingly it's an honor to be over there, not only for America, but to help them out as well.
Well, I'm not going to suddenly take the opposite position that I've taken for over an hour and say I agree with you, because I still don't understand why we are there. And I still don't understand what the end goal is. I still don't understand why we are supporting Karzai when The Economist magazine claims that he's not as popular as warlords were because he's so corrupt and brutal, you know? I mean, these are facts that I'm reading and I don't understand it. Why are we launching an anti-poverty program in Afghanistan? Where's the money supposed to come from?
You know, the difficult part of, you know, being a soldier Marine is you know, we're talking about policies that are set in place to assist a government that really, we're just there to help support it, whether or not we particularly agree with it. We just hope that these policies that are being put into place are going to empower the people, whether they're warlords or how corrupt the government is. I mean, we have to start sometime, but... You know, our hope is that the government can, you know, kind of come to fruition and establish.
But listen, Steve, I'm not trying to talk you against the war, because it's a terrible thing to do if you're fighting it. The Economist magazine describes President Karzai's government, and they claim that his vice president is a drug trafficker. They say that his government is, quote, so inept, corrupt, and predatory that people sometimes yearn for a restoration of warlords who, quote, were less venal and less brutal than Karzai's people. I mean, that's amazing stuff, and I don't know why The Economist would write a thing like that. Why are we launching a jobs programs for Afghanistan when we have so many people out of work here? Where is the money going to come from, Steve? Now, I'm a civilian, so I'm asking these questions. You are a soldier, and you do have to do what your commanders say to you. I understand that. Moreover, you have to believe in what you're doing, and I understand that. And I put myself in a very difficult situation by even raising this question, because a goodly portion of my listeners are military families. And I'm not so sure that they like my raising this question, Steve. But I, as a commentator, have an obligation to sort of go where the news is. And this is a big news story, and it's a yawning, gaping hole in the media right now. It's Obama's war, and yet we're not hearing about it because of that. Steve, God bless you, and stay on the line. I'm sending you a free copy of Banned in Britain, which will be out. My guess is if I send it to the printer in a week, it's going to be 2 weeks. September. Oh, God, it's not going to be out till late October. Believe it or not, we're running late. But you'll get your first copy of the first printing, first edition, right off the presses. I'll be right back.
Savage.
By Michael Savage, 1-800-449. No, I asked the question, who wrote the C was my Harvard and my Yale? And I was joking, 15 years before the mic is a joke. That's an inside joke here. Eureka, California, Tom, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, sir. It's a pleasure. Hey, was it Richard Henry Dana 2 years before the mast?
No, that's a wonderful book, and it could have been him, but it wasn't Dana. I mean, we've just been discussing it. Richard Henry Dana, 2 years before the mast, is a book that everyone should read when they're young. But he graduated Harvard in the 1830s, and rather than going on a grand tour, as most of his rich friends did, he didn't have the money, and he was a little oddball. He left Harvard and enlisted as a common sailor on a voyage around Cape Horn on a brig, the Pilgrim. And he came back to California to Massachusetts 2 years later. And he kept a diary throughout the voyage, which became an American classic called 2 Years Before the Mast, published in 1840. Now, the word before the mast means the quarters that the sailors lived in the forecastle in the front of the ship. So, no, that's apparently not correct. Apparently we have a winner, though, on line 9. Jeff, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, is it a book that you've quoted many times before, Moby Dick by Herman Melville?
It is, but do you know the exact quote? Let's go for broke. Let's do a Groucho Marx here. Let's go to the gold ring here.
Oh, I cannot give you the exact quote. I can't.
A whale ship was my Yale College and my Harvard. Herman Melville, Moby Dick. But you win the prize. You win a free copy of Banned in Britain. So thanks for calling. I think once in a while we should do a thing like this, with some American classics brought into the show, because, I don't know, it's just part of our cultural legacy. This book is amazing in many ways, in that here's a guy. This book, by the way, 2 years before the mast, was rejected by four publishing houses before Harper and Brothers offered $250 for it in 1839. It was published in 1846 in two versions. 1846. That's a long time. Well, why do I gonna read that for? I have the internet. I can sit here in my pajamas and put everyone down. Why do I need that? I can Twitter. What do I need to read that for? I'm so smart. Anyone says anything, I can attack them. Newspaper article comes out, I can sit and be a cyber bully in my pajamas. I can even start a fake internet newspaper. What do I need 2 years before the mast? That's old. That is so old. That's not smart. That's not smart. Obama's smart. He's smart. He's smart. He's smart. He's smart.
Send Fredo off to do this. Send Fredo off to do that. Let Fredo take care of some Mickey Mouse nightclub somewhere. I can handle things. I'm smart. Not like everybody says. Like dumb. I'm smart. And I want respect.
These guys can read my mind now. We've been together so long on the radio. I mean, I was thinking of that piece, but I couldn't say get it. They got it anyway. You guys are so good, I don't know how to do without you now. I don't care about the glue usage, nothing. It's all okay now. Oh, boy, what a week, huh? What a week to be in radio. What a week. No one's in the media. I mean, Wolf Blitz is gone. Golfer's gone. Wallbanger's gone. Is Hem around? There are rumors he's visiting the Prep H manufacturing plant to make sure that there's no toxins in. Come on, I don't know where they are. Look, we could talk about serious stuff or cougars, whatever you want to talk about. Where is Obama? His ratings are in the toilet. His approval ratings are in the garbage. And suddenly you don't hear a word from him. And all of the useful idiots in the media are not talking about health care or him anymore. The talking points came out from Rahm Emanuel saying, drop the subject, let the idiots go to some barbecues and poison their brains with nitrites, and then we'll come back and have fake town hall meetings with the Acorn people and the rent-a-mobs, and then we'll convince them that they need socialized medicine. That's coming next week to a town near you. 1-800-449-8255. This is Savage Nation.
Savage.
It is the end of August at the Hotel Savage. We're actually, of course, in September. Here's September 1, a deadline for the Labor Party of the British government. I put them on notice, and I haven't heard from my lawyer in England. I don't know whether they've responded or not. I don't know whether they've agreed to take my name off the list. The last I heard, the Labor government is doing the bidding of the powers that be, the same way they released the Lockerbie bomber for oil. They were told by their masters in the Middle East to put my name on the list, and apparently the Labor government doesn't want to remove my name from the list. This should be a very, very serious story for any journalist in America. This is a very dangerous precedent, and yet the so-called media in America is not covering this story because they hate my politics, and they don't like Michael Savage. They're jealous of me, number one, jealous of my success primarily. And as a result, they make believe it didn't happen. Well, if it can happen to me, it can happen to them. That's all I can say. And they should know that. But you see, at the end of the day, it's all self-interest. And at the end of the days, it's all vanity. San Diego, Mark, you're on the Savage Nation.
My thinking, Dr. Savage, is that a victory in Afghanistan results in nothing more than a Pyrrhic victory, because even if we win, we lose. And the reason I say that is the key to that area is Pakistan and Iran. If you fast forward 2 years from now, Iran has missile capability and a nuclear weapon, which can reach London or Europe. That means the collapse of NATO. And then you have an umbrella protection zone for all Taliban and Al-Qaeda. So winning and sweeping and clearing all of Afghanistan results in no accomplishment.
Now, you're a Vietnam vet. This is very analogous, quite analogous to the NVA, isn't it?
Yes. Yes.
And the NVA was covered for by China. And although the American troops beat them militarily at every turn, the politicians turned against the military, undermined the military, declared the Tet Offensive a victory for the communists when it wasn't. And as a result, the Americans left. And then they swept into the South, and a million South Vietnamese were killed. This is a terrible picture, isn't it?
I think it's terrible. I think the Afghanistan people are going to be killed the same way after we leave. And if we sweep and clear that area completely, we then have that problem with Iran, and that doesn't go away.
So being a combat veteran from Vietnam, seeing the government repeating the same exact mistake as they did in Vietnam, what would you recommend, Mark?
First of all, it breaks my heart to see boys getting killed when we have weapons that can win a war that we refuse to use. And I think that it's a disgrace that these boys are sent in harm's way, not being able to win the war. I know people that are...
You know something? I'm a non-military guy, and I feel exactly the same way. I used to be a worshiper of military history. I won't watch it anymore, because I'm sick and tired of the government media complex and the military-industrial complex showing me weapons that cost the billions or trillions of dollars that we refuse to use. I agree with you 100%. What is the point of all these submarines? What is the point of all of these high-flying invisible bombers? What's the point of Tomahawk missiles when we have a chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff who won't even fire a BB gun?
The troops are not even allowed to take aggressive action unless fired upon, and then they are not allowed to use excessive force. That is the rule in Iraq and in Afghanistan.
So in other words, they've been turned into policemen rather than military. That's exactly what Bush did to them, and now Obama's following in his footsteps.
So they have to wait. It's like a bar fight. Are you going to wait for the guy to hit you, or are you going to hit him first?
Yeah, well, apparently we've been telling our boys to wait till someone breaks a bottle and puts it in your face.
And that's why we don't have a chance, unless we deal with...
Well, Mark, you know that the British lost in Afghanistan, and you know when it occurred. In fact, the poem about the Khyber Pass, if I'm not mistaken, was about... wasn't it in Afghanistan? You know anything about military history?
Yeah. Are you referring to the Charge of the Light Brigade? That was...
Yes, that's correct. But wasn't that in Afghanistan?
I think that was the Boer... I forget now. But
well, you just think of all the brave Westerners who have died in Afghanistan over the last 200 years, and you ask yourself, why are we in Afghanistan, and where are all of the anti-war protesters? Anyway, my friend Mark, thank you. Stay on the line. Free copy of Banned in Britain goes out to you. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. So who is the warmonger? Michael Savage asking why are we in Afghanistan, or the liberal slash progressives, those who have passed the torch to Obama from Kennedy? Why are all of these anti-war left-wingers, like the Dorch woman, Dorchland Uberalis, why is she in favor of the war in Afghanistan? Does anyone have an answer? Nobody knows. So who is the warmonger? Who is the warmonger? The illiberal left or the conservative right? Who are the warmongers? If you study the question, you'll come to understand that you're on the wrong side of history. That's all. That's all. Very simple. Very simple. Very, very simple. Analyze it. You'll find out you're on the wrong side of history and that you've been duped and that you were used by the Democrat Party to elect the imposter. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. Any other topic is fair game. In fact, let's see. Here's a caller. Alex from Chicago. Topic, please. Alex? Yes, Alex, you're on the air.
How you doing, Dr. Savage? Yeah, in response to your question, why are the Marines in Afghanistan? Well, I had just come back from there not a month ago, and just as I was leaving, they were coming in, and their sole job was to go down into the southern provinces such as Helmand, etc., to wipe out any of the Taliban strongholds that were lurking down there in order that the U.S. Army, along with the Air Force and Navy, go down there to establish provincial reconstruction teams in order to rebuild schools for the children, and places of recreation, etc. The only catch was none of the local nationals wanted us there. And now the soldier, you know, just the Joes are just sitting there going, wondering, well, then why are we here? Why are our friends dying? Why are we watching people bleeding all over the place, getting hurt that are on our side, if these people don't even want us?
Well, I understand that only 4,000 Marines are contesting control of Helmand Province, which happens to be the size of West Virginia. Do you think 4,000 Marines are enough to wrest control of Helmand Province?
Absolutely not.
There are Afghan soldiers there who are supposed to be fighting alongside the Americans, but they say they are there for vacation.
Most of those Afghan soldiers are the ones that are going to turn around and shoot the U.S. soldiers in the back.
It's terrible. I mean, the whole thing's crazy. Doesn't make sense to me as a non-military personality. What in the world are we doing in Afghanistan? But more importantly, why are the men dying? For who and for what? And why are we propping up Karzai's government is the question. And I'm not the only one asking it. George Will wrote a great article today, Afghanistan, Time to Stop Nation Building. And I think you ought to read it. I really do, but we can move on. How about Britain releasing the Pan Am murderer, the Lockerbie bomber, to a hero's welcome? And him arriving to Gaddafi and what the media said today. You're not going to believe this because I'm going to play it for you now. The left-wing vermin in the media actually celebrated Gaddafi today and called him a leader. Listen to this in clip one.
Big celebrations in Libya today to mark the 40th anniversary of the coup that brought Colonel Muammar Gaddafi to power. Gaddafi has been ostracized for decades over accusations he supports terrorism. And Libya's warm welcome of the Lockerbie bomber has sidelined the country and its leader once again.
His leader? 40 years as a leader? The supreme leader for 40 years? See, these people at CNN and MSNBC give themselves away without even knowing it. They would like Obama to be our leader for 40 or 50 years, the way Castro has been, the way Gaddafi has been, the way Kim Jong-il has been. I don't think you people understand what you're dealing with here. You're dealing with psychotics in the media who either knowingly support dictatorships or don't even know what they're saying. Listen to clip two.
Colonel Gaddafi has been in power longer than any other world leader, has made plenty of enemies in that time, but after 40 years appears to be giving the impression he's putting his past behind him.
Libya
what?
Compensated the families...
Wait, let's stop right there. He put his past behind him? You know, you ought to be banned in the U.S., you snotty piece. You ought to be banned from our country's airwaves, you piece of garbage, you. What, you think because you speak with that fraudulent accent that I think you're smart? You are supporting a murderous dictator. The only president we've had who knew how to deal with him was Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan, if you remember, sent an aircraft carrier into the Gulf of Tripoli. When Gaddafi threatened our interests, Ronald Reagan launched F-15s, Eagles, off the decks of the carrier, and they fired missiles into the tent of Gaddafi. Gaddafi became a changed man after Ronald Reagan's muscular response to his activities. He did not become a changed leader as a result of playing nice with him. And that is why we need a leader like Ronald Reagan again. As imperfect as Ronald Reagan was, and he was very imperfect on a domestic front, and I wrote about it even then, he certainly knew how to deal with dictators like Gaddafi, which is certainly not the same situation we have right now. Listen to three.
Hugo Chavez from Venezuela, we've seen him arrive. Raul Castro got out of his car here about an hour and a half ago. Robert Mugabe, the president of Zimbabwe, President Bashir of Sudan, have all been here in the past couple of days, and we've seen plenty of others. It's taken about 2 hours to get them all.
So this is a list of the world's worst dictators. Castro is there. Chavez is there. Communist, fascist dictators are there to celebrate the release of the Lockerbie bomber and to celebrate with Gaddafi. If we had real leadership, if we had real leadership that really cared about America, you know what they should do. You know what they could have done from a long, long distance away. And most of the world's people would be freer and be celebrating today. But instead, we have a situation where Michael Savage, true American, is banned in Britain, while the Lockerbie bomber is given a hero's welcome after being released by the vermin in Scotland. The world is upside down, my friends. It is Alice in Wonderland. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Finally, we are talking about Afghanistan and why we are there, should we be there. And I have predicted that there will be a growing anti-war movement in the United States of America very shortly. The only reason the left is not protesting the war is because the rent-a-mobs that were against the war in Afghanistan, in Iraq, excuse me, are now against those of us who want to retain our freedom with regard to health care. And so the rent-a-mobs are busy now being instructed on how to pretend that they're average citizens who don't really work for the Democrat machine. But the people themselves, particularly the families, the military families, are asking increasingly why their men are coming home in body bags and why they're coming home without legs and arms. This is going to grow. Now, this is not the first time bloody slaughter has occurred in that area. It's been going on for ages. There were, going back to the Indo-Aryans, migrated to India via the Khyber Pass, conquests of Darius the First, Alexander the Great, Muslim invasions of South Asia, which then established the Mughal Empire in the 1500s. Remember, the British invaded Afghanistan through India, and they fought three wars there, 1839, 1878, and 1919. Three wars. A member of the British force of 1919 said every stone in the Khyber has been soaked in blood. Rudyard Kipling, the great poet, said, "It was a sword cut through the mountains." He's talking about the Khyber Pass. And that is a pass that connects Afghanistan to Pakistan. Why we are there? Again, strategic reasons, I would suppose. But what are the strategic reasons? Who are we protecting? And what are we protecting? Is it worth American lives to be there? Now, I turned on another show today driving into the studio, and I was shocked, absolutely shocked, to hear a fill-in for the golfer say that the number of men who have died in Iraq and Afghanistan is very small compared to World War II. I was shocked. I really detest hearing that. Because these warmongers, the fake neocon warmongers, if you want to call them that, how they call themselves neocons, I don't know. They're really neo-libs, which I call neo-Marxists. Because anyone who would say that the number of men who have died is a small number compared to World War II. When they themselves have not served, when they themselves do not serve, you know, borders on the obscene. It has an ick factor that's very high. It makes me squirm to hear all of the armchair generals say, yeah, go get him. We love you. You're a hero. It's really sickening, frankly, to call for war when you're not fighting in one. And that's why I'm very proud to say we don't belong in Afghanistan. Not only because I'm not fighting in it, but because we have no strategic reasons there that I understand. And if I don't understand them, how do you understand them? Why has Obama not gone on national television and instead of talking up rubbish about health care and global warming and the other garbage agenda items of the left, why has he not gone up once and said, we are in Afghanistan, your men are dying for the following three reasons? He's Mr. Literate, isn't he? Mr. Glib, Mr. Literate, the man who can say anything and con anyone and pull gold out of sunshine. The man who can pull golden threads out of sunshine itself. Barack Hussein Obama has not given one speech on Afghanistan that I know of where he's actually said, here's the reason your husbands and your fathers and your sons have lost their legs, arms, eyes and in Afghanistan. I realize it's a small number for the golfer. You know, it's only a few hundred men are dying. It's nothing to the golfer. You know, harumph. Nothing to the golfer. Right on. All power to the soldier. Well, I don't know. One life is worth giving for Afghanistan. Do you? Can anyone tell me why we're there? I still don't know why we're there. If you can convince me we should be there, perhaps I will change my opinion. After all, this is a show where reason prevails. It may not sound that way, but it is that way. Explain to me why we have to be in Afghanistan. Tell me why Obama's war is a good war. Steve in New York, WOR, go ahead, please.
Hello, Michael. Yes. Michael, I'll tell you why American boys are dying in Afghanistan. They are dying for very much the same reason that Nazi boys were dying from 1940 to 1945 on the streets of Amsterdam, because they did not belong there and they were despised. But I would like to address your question as to strategically why the Bushes and the Obamas, and before that the Clintons and Papa Bush for that matter, why they put us there. Afghanistan is the key to control of the resources of Central Asia and particularly the resources of Siberia. The route for that oil out of Siberia, much, much larger than the oil, for instance, in the Middle East that we're all concerned with. The route to salt water necessitates passage through Afghanistan to the Indian Ocean. And if no other...
Wait, pause right there. You're saying the route of an oil pipeline coming out of Siberia is going to run through Afghanistan?
100%, absolutely. And then just 100 miles or so, 150 miles through a small piece of Pakistan to the Indian Ocean. And the reason we're there, if not to get that oil ourselves, is to prevent that from going to China.
Wait a minute. Let's pause for a minute. But the oil's coming out of Siberia, which is a part of Russia, correct?
Well, it's a part of what used to be the Soviet Union.
Yeah, part of the USSR, the old Soviet Union. The Siberian oil is now independent of Russia?
The oil of the 8 million square miles of the Soviet Union is no longer the property of the people of the Soviet Union, not even the people of Russia. It's the people, for instance, Sakhalin Island in the Pacific Ocean was surrendered to ExxonMobil in 1995 by Boris Yeltsin. The BP people are the...
So you're saying this is still a war for oil?
100.0%, absolutely. This is blood, our blood, for Exxon's oil.
You agree with me that the reason Bush lied when he said that the Iraq war would be self-sufficient, it would pay for itself with Iraqi oil, he lied. And the reason that we don't see any Iraqi oil being pumped for reparations is because the Seven Sisters oil companies do not want it to be done so, correct?
Less than seven now. You know, the Exxons have swallowed the Mobils. And by the way, that's fine.
Yes. No, I hear you. Sounds like you know what you're talking about. So it's another war for oil. Strange we don't see any bumper stickers in Marin County and San Francisco. I guess they're busy protesting Americans.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language,
adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, here's what's in the news today. I mean, I noticed the big headline is that Harry Reid says that Kennedy's death, he says, I think it's going to help us. You know, with Reagan, there was a line from one of his movies, win one for the Gipper. I guess you could say here, win one for the Guzzler. Are they crazy? Why in the world would they exploit Ted Kennedy's death like this, number one? And number two, do they really think it's going to change the minds of most Americans? Ted Kennedy was not loved by most Americans. I want to repeat that. I will go on record again, and I will say that if a poll were to be done by Rasmussen, the most accurate of all polls, more Americans did not like Ted Kennedy than like Ted Kennedy. So to keep going on and on about Ted Kennedy as though he's the second coming is absurd. I think they should, you know, let him, God rest his soul. He's gone. It's enough already. Now, can you imagine who they're talking about replacing Kennedy with now? Chris Dodd, that other prize. Yeah. That other prize above all suspicion. Chris Dodd now is going to take a leadership position. Unbelievable to me. And speaking of leadership, where is Obama? Well, he's plotting his resurrection at Camp David. Because his polls now, the polls for the most accurate are showing he's slipping away. Approval is at 45%. Unprecedented drop. All the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Obama together again. The people have seen him, they've heard him, they've watched him, and they don't like him. They increasingly don't trust him. So what they're plotting is anyone's guess. Now on to Afghanistan. Remember what you heard on the Savage Nation. I said that there will be an anti-war movement arising in this country, and it will be from the right, and I was correct. We're starting to see the arrival of some of these columns where they're saying, get out of Afghanistan, no more nation building, what are we doing there? Just what I've been telling you. This is Obama's war. The left said that when Obama would take power, there'd be no more war. Where are all the bumper stickers now? No war. When it was Bush and Iraq, no war, no war, no war for oil. No war, no war, no war, no war. And now they like this war because it's got a D on it. The hypocrisy of the radical left is beyond analysis. Where's the no war signs? Where are they? What are we doing in Afghanistan? Does anyone know? I've been asking this for quite a while now. Admiral Mullen, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, speaks of combating Afghanistan's culture of poverty? Are they crazy? Using the U.S. military to combat Afghanistan's culture of poverty? As George Will said, that took decades in just a few square miles of the South Bronx. And we're going to create jobs programs and local government services? They're crazy. They're out of their minds. It's unbelievable to me. Well, the fact of the matter is they've got to stop launching the New Deal in Afghanistan. What are we doing in Afghanistan? Then the wildfire in Los Angeles. It's menacing the city itself. It has nothing to do with global warming. It has to do with the fact that nature cleanses itself every summer by setting its forests on fire and cleansing out the old deadwood. Now, if the U.S. Forest Service was still the U.S. Forest Service, they would have cleansed out the old deadwood by burning it out a long time ago, and we would have fewer of these infernos. But because of the environmental nutcases, the Forest Service has been prevented from burning out the deadwood, and consequently we have these massive forest fires that now threaten Los Angeles, as an example. The foul air, by the way, has reached even Denver. What else do you want to talk about in the Savage Nation? Well, take a look around. today is September 1, isn't it? Today is the day that the British government was supposed to respond to Michael Savage to remove his name from the blacklist, the hate list that they put him on with murderers and terrorists. Thus far, my attorney in England has not heard from them. Please go to michaelsavage.com. Please look at the letter that we sent to the United Kingdom's Labour government. And please buy yourself a copy of Banned in Britain before we go to press to assure yourself that you get a copy of the first edition, first printing. Politicians are politicians. We understand that. But never before in our history have we had so many politicians playing against the nation. That's my opinion. Beowulf, what have you seen today?
Well, in addition to Obama's poll numbers plummeting, as you mentioned a moment ago with Rasmussen, apparently the Democrats in Congress are expecting double-digit losses as well. A prominent political expert is saying that many veteran congressional election watchers, including the Democratic ones, are seeing that maybe more than 20 seats are going to be lost the next election around.
Didn't I predict that months ago? Didn't I say that on this show?
Didn't
I say that the Democrats are going to suffer a bloodbath at the midterm election?
That's exactly what you've said many times before.
Because
the people
were hoodwinked by the most expensive campaign in American history with money that came from foreign sources and unknown sources to take this unknown far-left radical communist senator from Chicago and make him president. Now that they've seen the guy and heard the guy and see what he's trying to do to us in so short a period of time and his Hate America tours around the world, they don't like him. They don't like the guy. And I believe there's going to be unfortunately, the Republicans are going to be the victors, and I don't like that either. I'd like to see all independents win. I'd like to see returning combat veterans win. I'd like to see real Americans win. You know, I see that on my website, Spitzer is eyeing a comeback. Why not? I mean, compared to what some of the others are doing, Spitzer would be a good choice for governor. Don't you think? The AFL-CIO and Democrats push a new tax on Wall Street. You know, I actually agree with them. It's called the Tobin tax because it would mainly hit big investment firms such as Goldman Sachs, which are reaping billions of dollars in profits while the rest of the economy sputters. I'm all for it. I agree with the AFL-CIO and Democrats to push a new Wall Street tax because it only occurs, it is only taxes, not on everyone's trades, but about those who do electronic trading in tremendous volume. In other words, the major speculators were going to hit with a small tax, and it would deter speculation and raise a lot of money. I'm all for it. I really agree with them. So mark it down. Today, Michael Savage agrees with the AFL-CIO and Democrats. You know why? I'm an open mind. I'm not one of these Republican hacks that automatically knee-jerk says no. You know what I mean?
And apparently, at the same time, U.S. Marshals are getting ready to sell off Bernie Madoff's properties. Finally, Ruthie and Bernie, all their stuff is going to be going on the auction block.
Yeah, but you look at the why do they always, at the end of the summer, they're selling his house in the Hamptons? I guess the marshals were using it for the summer, you know, to analyze what they had to sell. They used it all summer. Now they're going to sell it when no one wants it. On the bottom of my website, michaelsavage.com, there's a picture of a bear sitting at a picnic table in a national forest. And the headline is Disturbing Wildlife Trend. Formerly self-sufficient animals are now showing signs of belonging to the Democratic Party, as they have apparently learned to just sit and wait for the government to step in and provide for their care. You got to look at that picture of the bear. I mean, that's really what's happening. Well, that's it for now. What about you, Beowulf? Win one for the guzzler?
I think we could go in that direction. Of course, you know, one of his liberal compatriots, Representative Gerald Nadler, apparently he wants to investigate the torture claims, and he's pushing for people who defend our country to be investigated in a big way.
Nadler is now going to run the Inquisition, is that it? Mr. Liberal is now the Inquisitor. Give him a black cloak and give him hot pliers. And there you got Nadler. Give him the S&M out.
A little bit later in the program, Matt Towery, who wrote an excellent article involving your situation with being banned in Britain.
Where is the compassion for a man who has harmed no one? Or do you reserve your compassion for bona fide savages like the Lockerbie bomber, he wrote? And by the way, Banned in Britain now contains the information people have been wanting, which is how the UK banned Savage for oil. We think that the Saudis pulled the string on this one, my friend, and that's why they won't let go. It was a straight-out
get Savage for the Dubai ports deal.
And also following up on the Afghanistan situation, Obama has his flax out, talking his ability up. I guess General Jim Jones has come out in the last day or two and said the Obama is doing administration is doing a better job of fighting terrorism than the Bush administration is.
Really? You mean domestic terrorism by suppressing everyone's freedom and having people frightened? They've suppressed terrorism in America, is that it?
No, he's got a D after his name, so it's okay, I guess.
No, it's not okay. Most important phrases to remember as we go into September. One, win one for the guzzler and pass the torch.
Senator Kennedy, pass the torch.
Savage. That liberalism is a mental disorder is well known amongst those of us who are not mentally disordered. I've published it in a best-selling book. I've repeated it. It seems that the progressives have a problem with the idea of responsibility, both personal and social. It may not be a mental disorder, but it is a disorder. Joining us today with his views on this is Dr. Peter Bregan.
Yes, Michael. Today I want to talk about the dread word responsibility. Children and progressives often hate the word responsibility. Adults who are failing in their lives often detest the word as well. When we were children, taking responsibility may have sounded about as inviting as grabbing a porcupine by the tail or jumping up and down barefoot on a bed of tacks. Every time an adult was mad or disappointed, we may have heard, "Be responsible." Or worse, "That's irresponsible." Some of us never get over it. I've seen 40-year-old men wince at the sound of the word responsibility. Like a punch in the nose or a slap on the face. Be responsible. Smack. It harms people psychologically, emotionally, and spiritually to view responsibility as a punishment imposed on us from the outside. Responsibility becomes something someone else wants you to do against your will and probably against your best interest. Too many adults resent the idea of taking responsibility, and that resentment becomes ruinous to their lives. Because the word is so emotionally charged, I've tried to find less painful synonyms. Maybe autonomy, but that's a word for philosophers, not ordinary folks. Maybe self-sufficiency, but that's about something specific, providing for our own needs. Maybe independence, but that's more the result of taking responsibility. There really isn't another word to substitute for the dread word, responsibility.
Well, what does responsibility mean to you?
Responsibility to me means that you own what you do, and you do what you know is right. You never blame what you do on someone else or something else, because you recognize that you are the one who makes the choices about your own actions. It means that you and you alone make your own decisions and take your own actions, and that you always do your best to do what you know is right. Responsibility means feeling eager and glad to accept the consequences of your choices and your actions. In fact, for a successful life, taking responsibility has to appeal to you. You have to want it and to seize it. I believe that rationality and love are the twin guidelines for responsible living. Responsibility means acting on the basis of rational ethics in everything you do, all the time and in every way. No exceptions, none at all. And then there's love. To me, the ultimate expression of a good life and the happiest life involves taking responsibility for becoming a source of love. Someone who takes joy in being aware of other people, creativity, nature, our national values, and God.
It sounds as though you believe responsibility is the key to understanding why progressivism won't work. They're just irresponsible. They're children.
Yes, I began by saying that progressives and children often hate the word responsibility. Progressives, statists, and extreme left-wingers dislike the word because it suggests that people are not entitled to good lives, that they instead have to work for them. It puts the onus or the burden on the individual. Responsibility is actually the dagger in the heart of progressives. That's because progressivism thrives on people feeling abused and victimized. Progressives and statists thrive on the idea that individuals cannot and should not take care of themselves. Being progressive too often means feeling sorry for and looking down on other people, rather than empowering them by defending their freedom, enlarging their choices and opportunities, and encouraging their sense of responsibility. From bailing out giant corporations to enforcing government health care, progressivism undermines responsibility. Our founders knew that freedom provides opportunity and that after that it's up to individual Americans to make the most of it. The founders continually emphasized the direct relationship between taking responsibility and enjoying happiness. In 1783, at the close of the War of Independence, George Washington made clear that from now on, Americans would be responsible for their own happiness. He declared, "At this auspicious period, the United States came into existence as a nation, and if their citizens should not be completely free and happy, the fault will be entirely their own." That was a quote from George Washington. Embrace responsibility because it's the only way to make a happy life. Embrace responsibility because it's the only way to give to others and to the world as much as you can. Embrace responsibility because you will become more truly loving toward yourself, other people, nature, your country, God, and whatever and whomever else matters to you. This brings me again to the refrain of my weekly report, the primary principles. Protect freedom. Take responsibility at all times. Express gratitude for all your gifts and opportunities. Become a source of love. You can listen to these reports and download the transcripts at Breggin.com. That's Breggin.com.
Thanks, Dr. Breggin. There are other topics out there. 1-800-449-8255. Busy eating Indian food for lunch and went to a buffet over 8. I always say to myself, don't go to the buffets. You know what's going to happen. You're going to eat that second, third plate. I ate the fourth plate. You know what's going to happen. You're making believe you're going there for the rice and the vegetarian, then you're going to eat the lamb, and I did 3 times. Because you say to yourself, well, the lamb is dead anyway. It doesn't matter. The poor thing's dead. And you do a Hail Mary over the lamb 3 or 4 times. It's unbelievable. This is how you cheat on your diet, is you go to buffets and you go back 3 or 4 times. That's what matters to me at this phase of my life. Is my mother used to say it was Italian or Chinese at the end of her years. Now, I'm not anywhere near the end of my years. I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
On my website, michaelsavage.com, there's an article by Matt Towery, which talks about the release of a true savage, that is the Lockerbie bomber, while the continuing banning of Michael Savage from the shores of the UK. Joining us now is Matt Towery to talk about his thoughts on this miscarriage of justice.
Well, Michael, I'm pleased to join you again as a guest on the Savage Nation.
Matt, give us a little background on your article. What made you write it?
As you know, several months ago, when I first learned that you had been banned from entry into Britain by the British government, I wrote in my nationally syndicated column for Creator Syndicate my personal outrage that you had been unfairly listed along with a motley collection of hate mongers and even murderers as an undesirable who should be denied entry into the UK. Now, at that time, I was motivated because of the fact that I had the honor, and I do consider it one, as a younger man, of earning a degree at England's Cambridge University. Now, my memories of the people of England and of my days there are so precious to me that I was shocked to discover that a man who is as learned as you are and with the intellectual curiosity that you have and the numerous advanced degrees from some of the world's top universities that you have gained, and the fact that you've never engaged in any sort of violent behavior or advocated any sort of serious harm to anyone ever, that you could somehow be viewed as an individual who could incite civil unrest were you to enter Great Britain. Ban of Michael Savage? Well, I thought to myself that had to be a prank. Well, at the time, Michael, I felt certain that so many of my colleagues from the world of politics and journalism would rise up to your aid, regardless of their political affiliations, recognizing that they could be the next to be placed on some Star Chamber-type list, given little or no recourse by which to clear their good name. Well, that was back in May. And, Michael, as you know, we're now in the summer, and we're entering the autumn, and there remains a deafening silence from many in the media, many of your fellow talk show hosts, conservative columnists, and politicians. And the time has come for these individuals to stand up and be counted because of new information that we've come to learn. But before I say that, and before I issue a challenge to all of these individuals, and in full recognition that my name is not a household name, I feel like I should explain why I feel I have standing to chide leaders in the various sectors of the media and government.
Well, why is that?
Michael, unlike most pundits, I actually served in office as a member of my state's House of Representatives. I was a nominee for the Republican Party for lieutenant governor in 1990, running with a gubernatorial nominee who now serves as a United States senator. Now, while serving in office, I was recognized as one of the nation's top Republican legislators. So unlike many pundits, I've served. I was an aide to a U.S. senator on Capitol Hill. I later served as a strategist for scores of congressional, U.S. Senate, gubernatorial, congressional campaigns. And I guess my most important role was as chairman of Newt Gingrich's political operation prior to and during his term as Speaker of the House. And I've been blessed to have met or personally know every American president from Richard Nixon to George W. Bush. I've not met Barack Obama, but because of my belief in honoring our leaders and now being a nonpartisan pollster, should that occasion ever arise, I would certainly take advantage of it and enjoy it. Now, these days, I head up one of the better-known nonpartisan political opinion firms. It's called Insider Advantage, and I write my column where I let the chips fall where they may. Now, I say all of that to explain that I know many of the leaders of the various centers of power in America, the ones who should be outraged over your treatment and should demand a reversal of the decision made by now-departed British Home Secretary Jackie Smith in placing your name on this list in the first place. And while some have expressed their outrage over the situation, the effort has been far too tepid and muted. But now there has been a turn of events that should eliminate all barriers to political leaders and influential columnists refraining from saying or talking about the banning of Michael Savage in Great Britain and keeping it from being a front-page story or a front topic of discussion on radio and television. Recently, Scottish Justice Secretary Kenny McCaskill allowed the man who was found guilty of the tragic bombing of Pan Am Flight 103 in 1988, killing over 200 souls near Lockerbie, Scotland, to be released from prison. Now, this Libyan spy, who reportedly is suffering from terminal cancer, was freed, according to McCaskill, for reasons of quote-unquote compassion. When I read this story, Michael, I was outraged. Apologists for the British government pretended that this could not involve the British government itself because Scotland's government acts independent of the edicts coming from Number 10 Downing Street. But we very quickly learned that that was not the case. After the released murderer was greeted by Muammar Gaddafi and a throng of well-wishers as he arrived in Tripoli, and apparently none other than Prime Minister Gordon Brown himself had written Gaddafi requesting that the freed terrorist receive no hero's welcome. Does that sound like an uncoordinated effort to you, Michael?
It sure doesn't.
It doesn't to me. So let's get down to the major points about this case and why it is that no one other than you and a few other good people seem to be willing to state the real facts. First of all, your name was placed on that list to provide some twisted sense of balance, given the fact that most on that list were Islamic. Unlike the others on the list, you had never threatened to harm anyone. You had never committed a crime. You had never been accused of something as vile as murder. In short, your name is on that list, and it stuck out like a sore thumb. Second, there is no doubt in my mind that to some degree, there was a coordination between officials, whether they be officials or pseudo-officials of our government, to place this decision into action. I believe that they were made aware of the fact that your name was going to be placed on this list and that they not only gave the green light but did so with a wink and a smile. Thirdly, we now have a situation in which speech, free speech in this nation, can be interpreted by other nations as actions of an act of hatred when it's merely a speech, a thought, something said on the radio, which, by the way, is regulated in this country by the FCC, which has the highest of standards. Now, this alone should be viewed as having a major chilling effect on free speech uttered in America in an era in which we all are told, like it or not, that we are a global community, forced to rely on global interaction in order to survive socially and economically. I would guess that this might include travel to many nations. Will the speech police begin to compile deeper lists? And will someone like myself, who holds an advanced degree from one of the world's top universities, which happened to be located in England, suddenly find myself persona non grata? I certainly hope not, given my rich ties and great love for that country. Fourth, you are being punished because of your philosophy, conservative but nonconformist conservative, and your style, self-admittedly, an often in-your-face, tell-it-like-it-is way of speaking to your audience. Now, as I mentioned in my article, over the years, it's been my privilege to appear on shows where the hosts have often had tough opinions. Chris Matthews, Bill O'Reilly, and Bill Maher, to name a few. Now, I particularly think of Bill when it comes to your being banned in Britain.
Why Bill?
While I may adamantly disagree with much of what Bill Maher says, there are times when I do agree, and more importantly, would have written the same column and taken the same stand had it been Bill Maher, who I believe would admit is capable of making rather strong statements. Were he banned, perhaps not from a nation that might be left of center, such as Great Britain, but rather banned from a nation that might be right of center, that took offense to one of Bill's famed acid-tongued remarks, I would fight for him as well, not just because I was a guest on his show on ABC when it aired many times, nor because I like him as a person, but because an action like this would have the same chilling effect and would be equally unfair. Now, I understand that you're having to spend your own personal resources and rely on donations from supporters in an attempt to clear your good name in the courts. This should not be the case.
Exactly.
I urge those who make their living off of the words they write or the speech they utter to finally recognize the hypocritical and downright silly action that Ms. Smith took when placing you on this list. I mean, every single writer, talk show host, and author, be they liberal or conservative, should join in asking the British government to show the same quote-unquote compassion for Michael Savage, no Savage at all, I might note, that they have shown for the Lockerbie bomber, a truly vicious savage who was given clearance, freedom, and a hero's welcome. Now, for those of us who do not walk in lockstep with all the powers that be, for those of us who are willing to be independent in our thoughts and our statements, and I count myself in a small way like you in that manner, it is more often a lonely road. It's easy to wave the American flag on stage with thousands of fans cheering you on as a journalist or a talk show host or a politician or a celebrity, but it takes much more courage to defend that flag and what it stands for when the reward is not cheering fans or adoring crowds. In this case, the reward is clearing a man's good name and telling the world that they cannot take our precious freedom of speech and use it and twist it into a political weapon, particularly in this so-called, quote-unquote, global society that they've forced upon us.
Well, I'm fighting for the bigger picture.
Now, know that you have millions who would urge the British government to swallow their pride and do, based on even what the polls in Great Britain say the people want, and that is to rescind this ban. Now, as an attorney who continues an affiliation with a large national law firm, and I realize I have too many jobs here, I continue to return to the concept of fundamental fairness and the utter lack of it and the capricious nature taken by Ms. Smith and the government of Great Britain. I will not stop in my effort to bring this to the attention of my readers, be they in newspapers or in highly read sites such as Town Hall or Newsmax. To me, this is not an issue of conservative or liberal, Michael. It's not Republican or Democrat. As an attorney, as I said, serving as of counsel with one of the nation's larger firms, I view this as an issue of not only fairness, but of defending freedom of speech in the United States and not allowing it to be used against American citizens in this so-called global economy and world that we live in. Now, I still love Great Britain and the British people, but as one might joke being a Cambridge graduate, this is an issue so simple even an Oxford graduate should understand it. Michael, we stand with you. We promise that we will continue to advocate for a clearing of your name, and we hope that others who have greater following and those who are on television and talk shows will finally join the rest of us in recognizing this injustice and ask that the British government do what is so simple and easy to do. Take your name off that list.
Matt Towery, thank you for standing up and for your support in this battle. I hope people go to michaelsavage.com and check out my new book, Banned in Britain.
Michael, it was a pleasure to be with you. It's a pleasure to stand with you, and I will continue to stand with you all the way through this.
Savage.
So Gaddafi of Libya gives the terrorist Lockerbie bomber a hero's welcome when he's released by the Scottish government. And what does the media do? They give Gaddafi the royal treatment. Listen to this fawning treatment.
Big celebrations in Libya today to mark the 40th anniversary of the coup that brought Colonel Muammar Gaddafi to power. Gaddafi has been ostracized for decades over accusations he supports terrorism. And Libya's warm welcome of the Lockerbie bomber has sidelined the country and its leader once again.
Celebrating his 40th year in leadership? That's how they talk about him? But wait, it gets worse.
Colonel Gaddafi has been in power longer than any other world leader, has made plenty of enemies in that time, but after 40 years appears to be giving the impression he's putting his past behind him.
Libya compensated the families of the Lockerbie victims with a $1.5 billion fund. And in the last decade, Gaddafi has given up his nuclear ambitions, dismantled his chemical weapons program, and rebuilt his relationship with the US and Europe, raising the question, is the Libyan leader, long the bogeyman of the West, a reform character?
The vermin in the media are covering for him. They're saying he's changed his ways. And now Nick Roberts of CNN rattles off the guest list for the dictator Gaddafi celebration.
Hugo Chavez from Venezuela. We've seen him arrive. Raul Castro got out of his car here about an hour and a half ago. Robert Mugabe, the president of Zimbabwe, President Bashir of Sudan, have all been here in the past couple of days. And we've seen plenty of others. It's taken about 2 hours to get them all seated on that stage behind me. Gaddafi himself only arrived about an hour ago, and there were still other leaders arriving.
What an absolute traitor. In another time, this reporter would have been jailed for giving such a glowing report about an enemy of freedom. And I bet Nick Robertson is not banned in Britain. Does it make me an evil man to ask you why we are in Afghanistan? Tell me who the warmonger is. Me, for asking the question? Now I'm the evil man? I should be banned where now? Where should I be banned now because I'm asking why are we in Afghanistan? Tell me which country I should be banned from. Who's the warmonger? Gordon Brown or Michael Savage? Why are the British troops in Afghanistan? Why are the Brits sending their boys to die over there? What are they dying there for? The great Labour Party of England sending their troops to Afghanistan for what? Nobody even knows why we're there. Why are we there? I want to know the answer. First of all, we're not going to win, I'll tell you right now. The British lost. Do you remember the Soviet Union, what happened to them in Afghanistan? You don't remember that? You don't remember in the 70s we were supporting I forget what they called them then. I don't even know what they called the freedom fighters of Afghanistan. Don't you remember? When they were fighting against the Soviets, they were called freedom fighters. Now that their sons are fighting our troops, they're not freedom fighters, they're terrorists. You don't remember we gave them Stinger missiles that wound up in New Jersey? You don't remember the U.S. military supplied Stinger missiles to the, what were they called then in the 70s? I forgot already. The Mujahideen. Their sons now are fighting the Americans. They're the same people. They haven't changed their philosophy. They don't want any foreigners telling them how to run their country. For better or for worse, it's their country. Why are we there? Why are we propping up a dictatorship? Why? I mean, why are the Marines being asked to die? Is it in our national interest in some way that I don't know about? I don't claim to be a military expert, and I claim to be a non-military expert. Or shall I say a military non-expert? So I'll turn it over to you liberals, because you're an expert in everything. Why are our men dying there? Because Obama said they should? Why are we there? Why is Congress not sending out anti-war messages? Where are the code stinkos? Where are all of the anti-war people? Where is the no war for oil bumper sticker? Where are the no war bumper stickers I saw all over the Bay Area for so many years? Where are they? Huh? No answer? Okay, moving on. I was going through my archives today because the archivist needs all the tapes, and I uncovered mountains of tapes from 1994, 95, 96 when I was a local host. But leave it there on tape. These are on actual audio tapes. I used to drive them crazy at the station and make the poor engineers record these shows. And I would put little wrappers around them with handwritten notes. Like today I talked about Ted Kennedy and Chappaquiddick. That was in 94. I was still things of that nature. Immigration out of control, 94, 95. While Glenn Beck was in rehab, I guess I was still talking. I don't really know, but all these notes are on. And I discovered old coins. Would you believe it? I found boxes and boxes of Morgan silver dollars, Indian head cents. Then I stumbled upon some things owned by my children in storage. God, like junior high school report cards and journals that I had them keep when we take them on ocean trips when they were in school. I remember we used to take them on trips and take them out of school because there was a credo that your child will learn more on a cruise on an ocean liner in traveling and experiences than he will in the sixth or seventh or eighth grade. Well, that was a liberal credo. They wouldn't say that anymore because liberals don't travel with their children. They're too busy traveling with themselves so they can switch hit with each other while they're on the road, and the children are left at home with a house sitter with Ritalin. But we actually traveled with our children on ocean liners, and I found the journals, they're very touching. Usually the child, it's very much out of Mark Twain. It's very cute. The journals, I say, okay, look, son, here's what we're going to do. We're going on a trip for 4 weeks in December. You're going to be out of school. I'm going to miss 2 weeks, 3 weeks of school. But I'll tell you what, you're going to keep a journal of every port we go to. That's when I was collecting plants in the South Pacific, Fiji, Tonga, Samoa, the Palmyras. I mean, amazing places. And I said, and if you meet interesting people on the ship, you're going to make notes of it. And birds, you're going to make notes of birds that you see and things that. Sure, Dad, great, love it. And the first day, they sit at the table, you know, the card table, while the people are somewhere else up in the dining room, and they write. You look at the journal 20 years later. It's only 2 pages are dutifully entered, and then the rest are blank because kids are kids. They were busy living and enjoying themselves instead of writing down a stupid journal that nobody would ever read. They actually were looking at the birds. They actually were running on the decks of the ship. God bless them. I'm glad they didn't keep a journal. But those first 2 pages were really well. Good penmanship was great. No, those are the days. You know that my bar bills, I still have some of the bar bills from those ships. My bar bills for wine and drinks were higher than my rent was. They used to charge you. There's nothing else to do on a ship other than drink. That's the big secret of why people go on. Well, you see, in those days, ships were a little different than they are today. Today, they're floating Las Vegas hotels. What they are is like a Motel 6 with propellers today. You can't even walk on a ship and enjoy the air without some kind of Muzak driving you indoors so that you gamble or buy some garbage that you could buy in Target for less money, for example. But in the days that I began traveling on ships, I traveled on some of the last great ships, the Oriana. In fact, I just found some artifacts from the Canberra, the Oriana. These were amazing ocean liners that were used for actual transport as opposed to being simply a floating brothel. With God's will in your listenership, I shall return. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.